manifest your dream partner. It sounds to a lot of people, it sounds crazy. Like, do I just think of, you know, my dream partner and then poof, they appear? Or how does it work?
Okay, so it works just like all manifestation principles. It's the same stuff, right? You decide what you want specifically, you write it down, yeah. You know, and I always say, don't say I just want a relationship.
Yeah.
You're going to get just the relationship.
Hey, you say, I want universe
exactly.
Listens.
Exactly. And we do that so much. Like in our thoughts, you say, I just want someone to groove with. I just want someone to talk to. You will get someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. And then if you look back on some of your experiences, you're like, yes, I manifested from a point of like I was just like focusing on the one thing that I needed then, but not on the holistic picture. Mm. You know, I want somebody to build a happy and healthy relationship with, or to build a family with. And I want them to be into these particular things. I want them to be emotionally aware, to be self-aware, and to be into person.
Hi tribe, welcome to the Lebo Lion Show, the biggest marketing and entrepreneurship podcast on the African continent. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been feeling a little bit tired, a little bit lethargic, and I feel like the end of the year needs to come now. And that's why today's guest is here, because she adds a different angle to the kinds of conversations we have on this podcast regularly. And she brings the healing element. She brings the self-care, real self-care element to it. She brings the self-awareness element to it that I think a lot of us need right now, because we need to reboot. The year isn't over. We still have two more months. So we need that energized. And I think our guest today is going to give us just that. And as you know, on this podcast, we don't introduce the guests, they introduce themselves. So Yvette, welcome to the Lebo Lion Show.
Thank you for having me.
Please introduce yourself to those who don't know who you are.
Name is Yvette, like you call her. Also known on social media or digital platforms as Yvette Alu. Mm-hmm. What I do, who I am, child of God, of child of the divine. What I do is that I'm a coach, you know, so I help people heal from their past experiences. And basically, if anybody, I'm the person you come to when you're going through something and you don't know where to start. Mm. If you're feeling stuck in your career, in your life, in your relationships, if you're noticing a pattern that's going on in your life, finances, or any area in your life, and you feel stuck, I'm the person that most people come to. So that's most of the work that I do, is centered around healing and helping people to just grow, develop, you know, type of thing. And then, of course, I've written a book called Living Consciously, so I'm an yes. author. And what's the other thing that I do? Then I have a business called Rooted Well. And that is my wellness, personal development, and healing community, etc. So that's, I think I've named some of the stuff I do. Leadership coaching, I do a lot of things.
Yes.
But most of my work is really just around personal development, healing, and growth, and helping people to create the lives that they want.
I love what you said about personal development, healing. We're going to talk about that in this podcast today. But before we do that, I wanted you to perhaps lead us into some kind of exercise that we can do, mm-hmm. just to get everybody at home to breathe, relax, okay. and really get into the flow of what we're going to talk about today.
Okay.
Cool. All right, let's do it.
I won't do the other ones because they yeah. might make you too calm. So we are going to do a breathing exercise, which I saw on Red Table Talk.
Cool.
It's really cool and it's very easy. So you can do it when you feel emotionally overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Or when you're just feel like you're not able to regulate your emotions, you know. Mm. So, okay. So what you do is you say, breathe in. And then you breathe in the thing that you don't want. So, wait, breathe in love, breathe out fear. Yes.
Okay.
Let's do it again.
Okay.
So you say, breathe in, you say what you want, love, breathe out, fear. And then again, you try that again, you say, breathe in, joy, breathe out, sadness. So, okay, we're going to try that again. So think of something right now that you want to let go of. And then, of course, you think of something else that you actually want. So that's how it kind of works. Maybe
okay.
you can do one as well.
Oh, way. Lord have mercy.
So
okay.
I'll do mine. Breathe in. Confidence. Mm. Breathe out. Stress.
Huh.
Yeah. Do you want to
try it? I like that one. Okay, let me try it. Okay. I'm trying to think of the right word. Because there are many things I want to breathe in right now. If you guys knew the day that I had.
That's why I'm saying try it.
Which is why I need to find the right word. Okay. So we breathe in the thing that we want, and we exhale the thing that we don't want.
It'll come to you as you do it as well. So just start.
Okay.
Say breathe in.
Okay. Breathe in calm. Exhale or breathe out stress.
Yeah.
I need to do that again. Because it's been a day.
But it helps, right?
It does help.
It does help.
It does help. In fact, you know, sometimes when I do my speaking engagements, I start with affirmations. Because, okay, you know, the crowd is usually energetic and people are there, we're vibing, there's music, there's alcohol. And sometimes you need people just to come back to equilibrium, like just to center themselves and really be present for the conversation. And I think this was important today because all of us are living really busy lives. You know, some people are watching this as they're cooking, or, you know, with their kids making a noise in the background, or whatever the case may be. And it's just a reminder to breathe, to remember to put yourself first, breathe, and then you can face the tasks at hand. So Yvette, you speak about healing. That's a very big thing right now. But what is it? What is healing?
Okay, that's a good question. I've never had anybody ask me that question too, so I'm going to be making this up. But I think healing, you know, it's when you feel that you something... Okay, so you know you need healing. So sometimes it's just the feeling that you get that something's missing in my journey. There are things that are not working out, you know, or you listen to your body, your emotions, etc. Because there's physical healing, right? There's emotional healing. There's maybe mental healing just in terms of thoughts and etc. So I would say, for example, if you need healing in terms of your body, right, then you've got a wound. So healing is that, you know, it's acknowledging that something is wrong. You know, I've been wounded, I've been scarred, or something happened to me and I need to kind of heal my emotions, heal my physical body, and heal my thoughts about myself, my opinions about myself, or the beliefs that I have about myself. So that's how I would describe healing. Yeah.
Would that be, so the physical one, would that be like rape? If I was raped, is that a physical wound, or what kind of wound would that be?
Okay, so it would be both.
Okay.
Because remember, the sexual assault or rape is it's a trauma, right? And trauma sits in your body and in your emotions. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that have been through something of that sort, they would then, you know, find themselves struggling with anxiety, find themselves struggling with deep sadness, find themselves struggling with, you know, negative thoughts as well. And then of course, because our thoughts are linked to our body and our emotions, then you'd feel that. You feel anxiety in your body. If I ask you, where do you feel anxiety in your body? Can you name it?
Oh, yes, I can.
Yeah, it's usually your stomach.
My stomach.
Your chest.
My neck.
You know, I feel it in my hands.
Really?
Oddly enough, yeah. Okay. I feel it in my hands. So we all, trauma sits in your body, etc. So that's why when you are in a healing journey, if you've been through maybe physical abuse, sexual assault, or past experiences, you know, maybe from your childhood, and also emotional, you know, trauma in that sense, whereby, you know, you need certain types of healing, it's that you need to also heal the body. So it's not just one part. You know, something that I've been encouraging with a lot of my clients recently is that if I know they've been through a physical trauma, and I'm not talking about accidents and stuff like that, because I can help with that, but a lot of my work is not really around, you know, like, I've just been through an accident, I need your help.
Yeah.
Most of it is that this happened in my childhood and I need your guidance and help to process these experiences. So when somebody comes to me and they say that, right, I'll help them through the emotion, I'll help them process the experience, but a lot of people don't know that the trauma is still in their body. And that's where yoga and certain practices that help you step into your body, to be present in your body. Because what happens when you go through a trauma is that you almost float out of your body. So you're very disconnected from your emotions. That's why people, for example, who've been through sexual assault, you might find them, you know, struggling to connect with their body. So then they will try to connect with others through maybe having sex with them, you know.
Being promiscuous.
Or sometimes you don't feel. So some people start cutting themselves so they can feel something, because you've disconnected from your body. You just want to feel something.
Yeah.
And then you might find harmful ways to kind of do that. So healing also requires physical healing as well. There's a good book called The Body Keeps a Score. I think it's by Bessel something. That really talks a lot about the different types of healing, especially when it comes to trauma, emotional or physical trauma.
You heard Yvette, she said, what's the name of the book?
The Body Keeps a Score.
The Body Keeps a Score. If you want to learn about different kinds of healing, that's the book that you should be looking at. But I want to focus more on understanding this word healing. And the reason why I want to do this is because if you look like us, you come from a background where our parents say, this is nonsense. You guys are too sensitive. There's no such thing. What is trauma? It's not necessary. You guys just don't want to work, or you are lazy, or you're not strong enough. You don't have a backbone. So for somebody who's sitting, who thinks exactly the same way, is healing fixing yourself? Is trauma what the feeling you get when something bad happens? What is it, and why is it not an indication of us being too sensitive or lazy or whatever the case may be?
I think you're that generation, first of all. They've got a lot going on. That's why most of us are in therapy, right? Like, most of us have to go see coaches, etc. Because there's things that they did that they may not perceive. You know, they think, oh, this worked. My mom did this before me. The generation before that did this. But it's like, you guys are anxious. You don't know you're anxious. But when your child makes a mistake, you shout at them, you beat them. Mm-hmm. You know, you overreact. That's a sign of anxiety. That's why a lot of people, like a lot of parents, you find that they don't have patience. They don't know how to regulate their emotions. It's not a thought. It's always the child must fix themselves so that I don't overreact. You know, you mustn't make a mistake so that I don't. So it's like there's no emotional regulation. There's no self-awareness, right? Yeah. So there's a lot going on with that generation, and it's just been continuously happening. And I think I'm trying to remember the second part of your question.
So the question was, is trauma the feeling we feel when bad things happen, or what is it?
So it's basically anything that's stuck into your emotional or physical system.
Okay.
That's how I place it. Because sometimes when we say it's something that happens to you physically, people are like, oh, then I'm not traumatized. But then you have perfectionism, right? Mm-hmm. So you're a perfectionist. You're constantly working to get people's approval, right? And you then create, that creates anxiety that eventually sometimes creates deep sadness or depression, right? Because you're constantly hard on yourself, your thoughts. Therefore, your emotions react to that. Your body responds to it because you're overworking yourself. You never allow yourself to rest. So when I work with somebody who comes in and says, I struggle with perfectionism, I'm like, okay, let's find the root. You go back to their childhood. It's when I was learning and trying to learn how to read, right? I would get beaten every time I made a mistake. When I passed, when I didn't pass a test, I would get shouted at or this and that, you know, or when I'd get good marks, I'd be told that, that where's the other 1%, you know, like African parents love to do all of that.
Yes.
So to a child, they cannot separate between, you know, this is just a parent that has issues. To a child, you take that in and you're like, oh, because I need acceptance, I need to feel like I belong, I need to feel safe, right? Then you become a perfectionist, because perfectionism keeps you safe. If I pass the test, my dad's not gonna hit me when, you know, when I see him. If I behave this way, right, then I'm gonna get the acceptance from my parents. And then that's how the trauma is built, because it's shocking to your emotional system to constantly living in a state of fear, right? Most people can't make that link between perfectionism and their childhood experiences or certain things that happened to them growing up. And it's based on core needs, right? So our needs, we have, you know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? We have safety, security, etc. And safety speaks about emotional safety, right? Not just physical safety. They need to be accepted. They need to belong. They need to connect. All those needs are valid. That's why even as adults, we want that in our relationships, right?
Yes.
But a lot of times that safety is not provided for children, right? From the people that are meant to provide it. So I think that answers your question to some extent,
I think it does, and you've really clarified it for me, but I'm going to ask just one more for those who are still non-believers, because I know you are there. I know you guys. I see you on Twitter all the time. A lot of the time when we have the healing conversation, even people in our generation and younger say, oh, but does everything have to come from your childhood? Like, does every bad thing have to come from your childhood? Yeah. We're making excuses, guys. It's really not that deep. Why the childhood?
I think, okay, so it's not all from the childhood, right?
Okay.
Earlier life, because that's when we're developing as human beings, right? That's when we learn how to treat ourselves, how, what love looks like, how to talk to ourselves, right? So children are like sponges, right? And every single experience that also we have, whether we're children or adults, right? When it's stuck into your emotional system, it stays in you. You know, so I think mainly it's because you're in that developmental stage. You know, you're learning what the world, you're forming your beliefs around the world, right? Your thoughts around the world, how the world works. So, for example, if somebody is, you know, has to be, if somebody starts believing that I have to perform in order to be loved, that's something that's going to be a foundational belief, right? And then they carry it throughout their lives. So I think it's because you're in those different developmental stages, and then of course you're a sponge, and that's how we learn. Children learn through modeling,
yes, right?
They learn through seeing what their parents do and how their parents treat them. That's why people that have observed their parents maybe being in toxic or unhealthy relationships, they tend to have the same pattern, because that's what you saw your whole life, so that's the normal. Or people that had sometimes you can even adapt things, like if your mom struggled with self-confidence, or a parent of yours struggled with self-confidence, and every single morning in the mirror you'd see them judging themselves, you can absorb that, you know. So I have clients that have fears, like a fear of driving, and then they're like, oh, you know, every time I thought, you know, there was always a conversation, it always came from fear. You know, we adapt, we absorb those things, you know. So how we, the things we believe about ourselves, the way that we perceive the world, our relationship with ourselves and the world around us as well, is greatly determined by our foundation, you know, the way that we're brought up. But yes, sometimes some of those things can come later. You know, for example, somebody that's been retrenched, you know, they might suddenly start struggling with self-confidence and all of that. Somebody that goes into the workplace and starts being treated differently because of their race, that could be a trauma as well, because every single day you're told that you're not good enough because of the way that people are treating you, you're getting rejected. So then you start to have self-doubt, you think there's something wrong with you, you know. So it's different experiences. Yes, most of the time, and I can tell you from all the clients that I've worked with, 95% of the time it's a childhood wound. And then other times, because of the wound, you then create other wounds as you grow older, you know. So you start dating, you know, or you start making friends. It starts, so this is how I usually explain it to my clients. You go to primary school, right? And then already at home, maybe you're rejected, your dad left at a young age, your parents don't treat you differently from your siblings. Then your friends at school in grade one reject you, and you're like, okay, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And then fine, you start dating maybe in high school, 16, 17, around there, 15. And then you're the person that you want, you know, is rejecting you, or they don't want you. And then your friends at school are also like, huh, you know, they treat you snacks. You internalize that and you're like, oh, there's really something wrong with me. I'm unlovable. You know, look at home, look at this. But all of this is unconscious. It's not on the surface level. Mm-hmm. And then you get to work, you know, you walk in there and then you have all the self-doubt already. You already feel like people are going to reject you. So when you walk past people, you're like, ah, they're definitely talking about me. Or when you're about to voice your opinion, you're like, ah, my opinion doesn't matter, my feelings don't matter, you know. So there's so many different types of things, and I can't talk about all of them today, but it just builds up. And then that's when you get to, now you're maybe in your 30s or 20s, and you're feeling really overwhelmed, and you're struggling with those emotions, the anxiety, the deep sadness, and you're like, where does this come from? You know, most of the time it's a build-up, because all those experiences you never processed, and here you are now, and then that's when you need you have to start the healing journey.
Ooh, you covered a lot there.
I know.
Guys, there's so many concepts we have to unpack there, and I don't think we'll have time to cover all of them, but I do want to go through some of them. In the meantime, guys, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, you know, do all the right things, and tell us in the comment section, what kind of traumas have you experienced from your childhood, or what kind of traumas have you experienced in the workplace, for example, that have changed the way that you see the world? Are you seeing a therapist to heal these wounds? What are you doing to help you navigate through them? Yvette, you spoke about how children model what their parents do, right? Whether the parent is actually aware that they're showing it or not, the kid sees it. So we've got parents who watch this podcast. Yeah. What kind of advice, or at least three steps, would you give them to start being aware of how they behave around their kids and to model something different if they want to take that route?
I think it really goes back to, you know, looking at your own behavior with honesty, you know, and saying, okay, am I modeling anything from my own parents? I think that's a good place to start. Am I modeling anything from my own parents that doesn't serve me? You know, because the way that everything gives you feedback in life, right? Mm-hmm. So if your kids are constantly frustrated, crying, you know, I remember once I had a friend, you know, and one of the things that would happen every single morning when she'd get her daughter ready is that it would be a war, right? Like, and at night before bed, it's a war.
It's a war.
And I was like, okay, but like, talk to her. Like, have a conversation, you know, and because I'm like, of course I'm not a parent, but of course I work with a lot of clients, and I'm like, every single person I work with was once a child. So
yeah.
I think that kind of credits me enough to say, okay, I don't need to have kids in order to be able to speak on this, right? But I was like, talk to her, you know, like, things. Okay, here's a really good example. It's like, for example, sometimes kids don't want to eat, right? Yeah. Nobody asks them, are you full? They just like eat, you know, a lot of people have like food trauma and then they have, you know, eating disorders because of the way that they were force fed. They were told that, you know, you have to finish that or you're going to sleep outside. Mm. Like, I'm 4 years old. Why am I being threatened with sleeping outside? Because I'm not hungry.
Exactly.
But as an adult, if you say, I am not hungry, people believe you. Mm. You understand? So sometimes it's literally saying, this person has a stomach this small, right? But we don't question things because we're used to believing that children don't have autonomy. They don't understand what they need. But those people are more in tune with their bodies than anything. When they're sad, they cry. When they're happy about something, they express it until someone tells them not to. You understand? So if you were to reparent, you'd look at, am I modeling anything? Just because my mom told me that I must finish all my food, you know, whatever, whatever, am I actually paying attention to the fact that this kid had a snack time at school, you know, and then they ate when they got home, and then they just ate now at 5 o'clock. Now I want them to eat a full meal, adult-sized meal, you know, at this time. Them choosing, I'm not hungry, is not disobedience. It's them expressing that their body is telling them that they are genuinely not hungry. And if you observe, sometimes it's exactly that. So I think you have to look at, am I modeling anything from my parents that isn't serving me? You know, what do I need to change that my children are giving me feedback? You know, their emotions, if they're constantly crying, tantrums, there's some things that are normal, right? Like toddlers. Toddlers are going to throw things around. Why? They're learning mobility. They're learning to throw things around. They're learning that these things can walk. Like, it's new stuff to them.
Yeah.
So everything they experience, they're learning to use lotion, how it feels on their skin. That's why they put the whole tub on their skin. But most of us are wired to think that that's being naughty. You don't understand it because you don't understand the developmental stages of a child. So I think understanding that, what's not serving you, right? What's not working, and taking the feedback from your own child, because each child is different, okay? So you can't, I can't give a formula in that regard. So I'd say just pay attention and pay attention to the feedback. And then look at yourself, right? What are some of the things that you needed or wanted growing up? Because by healing ourselves, then we become better parents, partners, etc., to everybody around us. So I would say also pay attention to your own needs that were not met, right? Are you trying to meet them through your children? Because that's not what they're here for, you know? Pay attention to the way that you speak to yourself, because they're observing, you know. So if you're unkind with yourself, you're probably going to be very unkind with your children. If you're impatient with yourself, you're probably going to be very impatient with them, you know. So pay attention to that, you know. And I think as you do the healing work within yourself, it actually becomes easier to actually, you know, parent your children not from that place of trauma or not from that place of fear yourself, but from a place of just saying, this is my child, they're not here for me, they come through me, and I'm here to guide them, right? I'm not here to punish them consistently for being human. I'm here to literally treat them with love, show them acceptance, and also guide them with, you know, I know the word discipline, but to guide them through those experiences and show them the right way. And that's pretty much what I would say, yeah.
Oh, I love what you said. Even there's a lot to talk about.
I know.
It reminded me of a show that I watched, and someone was saying that because they grew up poor and now they've made a lot of money, they just spoil their kids, and they thought that that was the best way to parent the child, because the child was getting what they didn't get as a child.
Yeah.
But all they got was like a spoiled child who wasn't grateful apparently for things, you know? And there was so much to unpack there, in the sense that actually, dad, you're always working, you're never home. So your child is actually screaming for attention.
And they're not spoiled. They just want the money.
Exactly.
Crazy.
So there's a lot there, guys. Yeah. And I would urge you to get Yvette's book, and I would urge you to start reading up about these things, because like we said, you know, your childhood really frames a lot of the person you become as an adult. So to build a better nation, a healthier nation, we have to start with parenting. We have to start with the children.
Yeah.
Now we're moving on to adulting. The ghettoest ghetto in the world.
The hood.
No. Is adulting. You know, I know that in self-actualizing, and in consciously and in healing, going to therapy, etc., I've noticed so many things about myself. And one of the things I noticed was that I self-gaslight. And that's something my therapist was teaching me about. And I post about self-gaslighting a lot, you know, and I see people like coming in my DMs and saying, oh my gosh, I do the same, I didn't know this is what it was. And I want to talk a little bit about that. What is gaslighting, and what is self-gaslighting? What does it look like?
Okay, so gaslighting, and this is all my own definition, right? It's really just when you invalidate an experience that you've been through, you know, so you invalidate your thoughts, you invalidate your emotions. So for example, when somebody else is gaslighting you, it's like, for example, those people that, you know, you're like, you've seen the message. You've seen the message. You know that they did something. And then they're like, no, I didn't do that. You're imagining things. You're crazy. You know, so they start calling you names so that you can doubt yourself, you know. So sometimes we do that to ourselves, where, you know, and there's many reasons for that, you know, whereby we've been through an experience. Let's say you went to in a place and then maybe it's a photo shoot, for example.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are certain things that made you uncomfortable. Maybe you're a model, you know, and then the person asks you to do things that you're uncomfortable with. And then you can tell that this person is doing something that, you know, intentionally to harm me, right? And that's your experience, but you're like, no, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe so it's when you have had an experience and then you now tell yourself, for whatever reason, right? Because maybe you're used to your feelings being invalidated, that's how you speak to yourself now. And then you start invalidating your own feelings, your experience, or your emotions, yeah.
And in the African culture, what does gaslighting look like? Because I know a lot of us feel these expectations from our parents, and there's our culture, right?
Yeah.
That says you must be this way, especially for women. You can't say, articulate your needs.
Yeah.
Even if you do, they actually don't matter because you wouldn't know because you're a woman.
Yeah.
How do we navigate through that?
Yeah. Gaslighting in an African culture, I've never thought about that. I would say that, I mean, it's any time I need, most of the times I know that, you know, when some of my clients, one of the things that they might want to do is go to speak to their parents and say, hey, how you raised me, you know, was not right, you know. And then, you know, also, first of all, you're told that it's disrespectful to you. Just to talk to your parents and call them out on things. It's disrespectful. Yeah. That in itself is like already wrong, you know. So they'd go sit down and have the conversation. And then the parent would say, that didn't happen. What are you talking about? I never used to hit you.
Yeah.
You know? What are you imagining? I never treated you differently from your siblings. What?
Yeah.
You're just making things up. You're an attention seeker. That's just who you are, you know? And then you get labeled as that. So I think that's what an example of gaslighting would look like, you know, when you literally have had that experience and then someone is just like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember that. That didn't happen, you know? Or you're just making things up. You're crazy. You know, that you've always been like this since you were a kid. And yeah, that's what that would look like.
And how do you as somebody who doesn't know anything about healing, but you're watching this podcast, how can you tell if you really did experience what you're talking about, or if I'm just finding excuses to validate maybe some of my bad behavior?
That's a good one, right? That is a good one. I think that one, listen to your emotions, right? Your feelings are never wrong. How you experience something. So you might not be the right person in the situation, right? So for example, you and I can have a disagreement, right? And maybe it's because you didn't buy me water for this interview.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I really would have liked some water. So me being sad about the water is okay, right? But me having not communicated that I want water, right? And making you responsible for that, that's when it's like, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
But how I feel about it, it's like, it's okay. I see that you feel sad about it, right? Okay, but take ownership in that sense.
Yes.
So I think it's a matter of, I always say, just validate your experiences. I think most people invalidate more than they validate. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times. And then, but I also bring in self-awareness to say, what is my contribution to the situation? Because that's when, and I'll be like, oh, I actually didn't ask Lebo, you know, for Lebo Line, for like, water. I didn't ask her. And then I sat there thirsty and I didn't say anything. And I'm glad that Lebo didn't give me the water, right?
Yes.
And we do that so much, like in friendships, you know, and other relationships where we're like, you didn't provide for me what I needed. And then you're angry. Your anger is valid. It's okay. Feel the anger, right? You are having an emotional experience. No one can come and invalidate that.
Yeah.
However, no one can come and say your anger is wrong. Your anger is fine. But then afterwards, we can say, or during that process, as part of that process, it's like, okay, I hear your anger, right? Okay, but what's your contribution? Had you communicated to me that you want this? Had you communicated that you wanted to celebrate anniversaries? Or had you communicated to me that, you know, you love gifts, or, you know, this and that, or you want to see me? You know, now you're just angry. So I think that's what it kind of looks like, where you can have the balance between accountability by asking yourself, what's my contribution to the situation? I encourage that to anybody. It's a question I ask all my clients whenever they're like, this happened. And I'm like, okay, listen, I validate. And I'm like, okay, but what's your contribution to the situation? They're like, I didn't set boundaries. I did not voice out what I wanted. I did not communicate. And therefore now I'm even more angry and I'm building resentment. And I'm like, okay, moving forward, what can you do in order to make sure that? I'm like, okay. And they'll say, okay, moving forward, I'll articulate what I need. And then if the person doesn't meet them, then I know to make a decision, you know, type of thing. So that's what that process looks like.
You spoke about a very important concept, the C word, communication, yeah. right? So we're listening to Yvette, she's saying all these amazing things, but how do I effectively communicate my feelings and my experiences to other people? Yeah. I've learned over time that sometimes the way we communicate can be the reason why we don't get from an experience what we want to get out of it, you know? So it's not always the other person's fault for not necessarily validating us, because in how we communicate, we invalidate them. And so they can't kind of meet us.
Everybody's invalidating each other. Fighting. Yeah.
So how do we effectively communicate? Are there tools we can use? Is there a method?
Yeah.
How do we do it?
So, okay, there are a couple of methods that I do share with the people that I work with, and I also use myself, because my communication was, you know, not the best, you know, and I think it's a definitely a learning curve. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I do encourage when it comes to communication, so it depends on what it is. There's communication to resolve conflict and all of that, but there are some main principles, you know, like listen without interrupting, you know.
Listen without interrupting.
You know.
Let's absorb that one.
Listen, you know, there's these things called the four horsemen of communication.
Okay.
So one of those things, I think I'm going to try to remember them from the top of my head. It's criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Right.
The four horsemen of communication.
Yes, you can
criticism,
Google those.
Stonewalling,
contempt, criticism.
So what is it?
Criticism, contempt, stonewalling, defensiveness.
Defensiveness. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. We won't get them in the right order, yeah. But you know. So basically, it's these things that a lot of people do. Like I think it was a psychologist or a therapist who studied them. I forgot his name. And then if it's not John Gottman, it's someone else. And basically, they came up with these four horsemen, because they always, you know, create conflict in relationships, whether it's a friendship or any type of relationship when we're trying to communicate. So criticism, it's like when you tell somebody every single time, you're like, yeah, you always dress like this. You're always like this. You know, that's like when you're
absolute
always saying negative
statements.
Things.
Yeah,
you're not saying what you want from the thing. You're like, I hate this coffee. You're not saying, please reduce the sugar.
Mm.
You know, that's helpful. It's just, it comes off as judgment in a sense,
yeah.
Right? And then contempt, it's like, we do this a lot, African women.
Oh, do we?
Like all of that stuff, the drama, rolling eyes, you're, like, you're not present for the conversation,
yeah.
And your body language, I think also people must remember that communication, I think, is about only, it's a very small amount of what is called this, your language.
Yeah.
Communication is mostly about 70%
non-verbal.
Body language, 60%
okay.
Body language.
Okay.
And then I think the other 30% is tonality and what do you call it, body language, and then tonality and pitch.
Okay.
Then like about 10%
tonality
language.
And pitch.
Yes.
Are we hearing that?
You know, so
that's important.
Most times we're communicating with our bodies, you know, and we don't even know it. So contempt, it's like, you know, when somebody's talking and you have all the attitude in the world,
yeah, just like,
which actually already is invalidating. I mean,
yeah.
They're like, what did you say? Do you want to say something? Like, no.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to say, you know, but your body is like giving it away. So that's contempt. And then stonewalling is, you know, silent treatment, you know, not responding, you know, not just not being there, you
yeah.
know, like just not being present in the conversation, which is like, it can make the person feel isolated or like they're not being heard. And you're like, I'm not saying anything, so it won't be harmful, but it is harmful to not respond,
okay.
You know? And then of course, what is the critical stonewalling?
Why is not responding harmful?
Okay, so I think as humans, we crave connection, that's one. And
okay.
You don't wanna, like if you walked into the room and I just acted like you don't exist,
mm-hmm.
That would feel...
What if you made me mad?
Exactly.
Why must I make you feel seen?
I still exist. I still exist. So
okay.
It's one of those things. It's like, I think people are like, one of the things that I also had to learn in my journey, like withdrawal is harmful. Like, and I always say, apply it to a child. If you're talking silent treatment to a child, it's like, it doesn't make sense.
Yes.
Then you start to have all these behaviors to kind of get their attention. That's when you start to apologizing, even when you're not wrong. It's harmful, you know? Nobody wants it. You all seek connection. But because some people struggle to regulate their emotions, you know, because the anger and all of that, maybe because of past experiences, they prefer not to talk, or they don't know, they don't want to be vulnerable. So they just keep quiet, and then they just kind of like, you know, ghost you, or, you know, they just don't talk, which is also harmful. And the last one is defensiveness, you know. So when someone's expressing something and then you're like, you also do this.
Ew. right?
Yeah. You also did this last week. It's like, hey, if find your own time to discuss those things, or just saying, you're also not perfect, or no, I didn't do that, it's your fault that I did it, blaming the other person. So that's defensiveness, like having all these walls up and not really hearing, because you can't have the walls up and really hear what another person is saying, So those are some of the things that are bad for communication. So what helps is connection before correction. That's the one, a big one.
That connection always, before correction.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So before you correct, start by just, hey, I really appreciate, that you do this and this. There's just a few things that I want to talk about. So invite the person to the conversation, set the tone, and then from there on, of course, like even with children as well, sometimes it's just complaining or just shouting at them, but it's like, hey, I really love you, but when you do this, it hurts, your younger brother's feelings. If it's, if the kid is hitting the other kid, you don't have to walk in and just, it's like, hey, I'm here. Sometimes you might find maybe the child feels neglected because there's a new kid in the house. They have a lot of emotions, so they need reassurance, So that's an example of the child. But even as adults, because even with the couples coaching that I do sometimes, you find that people will just, you're both angry, right? The tenseness is intense. You haven't connected in a long time. Sometimes that's why you're fighting. You haven't gone out on a date. Yeah. You haven't asked each other how you're really doing. And then you just, every time you talk, you're talking about a conflict. So when do you connect? So sometimes it's like, take a walk, just breathe, appreciate each other first. Then have the difficult conversation, because when you feel disconnected, and this is why I saw a post the other day that says that couples that are more intimate, like that hug, that touch, right, it's, they resolve conflict quicker. But a lot of people, and I'm those people, like, don't even touch me, don't even look at me, but I've learned that you can't just disengage because it feels uncomfortable. You've made a commitment to be there, so you have to be there if the goal is to resolve it, of course, unless you're in physical harm or danger.
Yes.
But it's like, even when I don't like you, I still love you. Everybody needs that reassurance.
Yes.
Right? And pulling away takes away that reassurance. Right? So those are some of the tips. I know I've shared a lot of things, but it's also just, set an intention for why you want to communicate, know what you want out of the conversation, listen without interrupting, and hear the other person. Like when they talk, validate them. When they say, when you did this, right, it made me feel this way. And that's also a guideline for communication. Not saying that you're so selfish.
You always
get to me. So rather say, when you went out and came back without bringing me a snack, I'm using, really small examples, it made me feel like you don't care. It made me feel like you didn't consider me.
Yes.
And then, because if you say you're selfish, you're calling the person a name, first of all, then they're going to get defensive and then the back and forth stuff. But when you tell them how things made you feel, when you didn't show up for a date or didn't ask about a date or follow up, it made me feel like you don't want to have the date, because that's what happened. You're not accusing anybody. You're describing it for what it is and telling them how it made you feel. Mm. Made me feel sad. But most of us fear vulnerability. So it's easier to say you're selfish, you're inconsiderate, rather than I did not feel considered when you did this, right? It made me feel really sad, unwanted, angry,
rejected.
Yeah, right? We feel like if we say those things, then we're exposed, and then people will take that will take us for a ride. So I think communicating what happened without calling names and then telling the person how it made you feel. I always say, speak from your heart, and tell the person so they can hear your heart. Most times people don't hear our heart because of all those, the four horsemen. Yeah.
That was a lot. I hope you guys have your notepads and you're writing all of this down, because there's just too much to absorb in 1 hour. You spoke about couples, and this is a big topic, relationships. I feel like every time I log onto TikTok, it's like 90% relationship content, and it's crazy. So many of us want answers. We want to understand how to navigate through relationships, how to find the right partner, how to identify if we've got someone who's taking advantage of us, etc., etc., etc. So I want to start, I think we need to have this relationship conversation, and I want to start with, what does a healthy romantic relationship look like?
I would say that, and yeah, a lot of people, we all want relationships, a lot of us, right? Not all, there's always the exceptions, and obviously, but I mean, we all want to connect, we all want to feel loved, we all want companionship. Those are normal human needs, so I think a lot of times we also invalidate that need, like, oh, why am I like this? It's like, it's normal, right? You want to connect and all of that. So I think when it comes to relationships, a healthy relationship looks like one where you feel safe to be yourself. safe to express your thoughts, your opinions, safe to communicate like what we just discussed as well. And then also you feel accepted like for who you are as well. And I think the biggest one is safety. I think that's something that people don't consider. Like, what do you feel energetically safe?
Like you can just express what you want, you can cry, be depressed, whatever you're feeling, it's safe to be that and feel that.
Because even, for example, outside of that, like when somebody, let's say you, this is, you know, during the talking stage, and like a lot of people, you know, hate talking stages, and like, guys, talking stage is important, but don't talk for too much, like, you know, but during that period when you're getting to know somebody, some people take the safety for granted, because when a person doesn't pitch, they've set a date, they just don't show up, right? That doesn't create safety for you. That's why you feel uncomfortable. We don't consider that as safety, but it is. You're saying, let me withdraw. Let me step back. And then you want to protect yourself. So someone being reliable creates safety, right? Someone showing up consistently creates safety. Somebody opening up and communicating to you creates safety when they say, I'm on my way. So we take that for granted. So I think one of the things that a healthy relationship looks like is that it's safe. You know, we spoke about gaslighting. You're not being gaslit when you express something or made to be the problem. Your emotions are validated, and also you're listened to, you know. And also, yeah, I think that's the main thing. Like, if we're speaking healthy, safety is a big part, and obviously the different types of safety, and especially physical safety, if that's not there, you know, that's definitely not a healthy relationship.
Do men and women love differently?
100%.
So give us some examples for the ladies who are watching. What it looks like for a man to love you, because I think, I mean, we're in the sugar daddy culture era. A man must, you know, if he's not giving me a girlfriend allowance, he doesn't really love me. So what does it actually look like when a guy, especially an African man, we don't have this conversation enough, what does it look like when he's showing you care and he's showing you that he wants you in his life?
You know what, level, like, one of the things that I had to learn in my journey is to learn what that looks like, because I didn't grow up with it, right? A lot of us don't grow up with it, to say this is what a decent man looks like. This is how he treats you, you know? And if you don't have a blueprint for something, you don't know how to model.
Yes.
You don't have it, right? And that's why a lot of women actually tolerate less than what they deserve, because you don't know that a person must be consistent. It's not even a thought, like, to be, that they must be consistent. Where would you know that?
Yes.
You know? So for me, I think, I wouldn't say like as an African man, but I'd say a masculine energy.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
You know? Like a masculine energy should make you feel safe. It's not aggressive, it's assertive. You understand? I know that men love to provide. It's just how they're made, you know, and that's something also for me with my own journey. I'm like, oh, these people love to give and serve. That's how I know. When they are not serving you, ask them.
What is serving? Like making you breakfast in bed? What is it?
It's a different type of serving. I think it also depends, obviously, because people are different. You know, they have different love languages, and that's a whole different topic. Mm-hmm. But I think things like taking care of you, man, making sure you're okay. Like, men pride themselves in making sure that you're okay as their partner. You know, and I've learned that, like, the relationship that I'm in right now is one of the healthiest that I've been in, you know. And one of the things that I've learned to also, because I was one of those people that, you know, Miss Independent,
yes,
I can do it myself. I don't ask for help.
Yeah.
But then he makes it so easy, because I saw that he wants to do it, like, all the time, like, with anything, like, wants to make my life as easy as possible. Which is interesting, because that made it easy for me to step into my feminine. Be like, oh, you're willing to do anything for me? I don't mind cooking. You know, you're willing to do it, and I don't enjoy cooking. But with him, I'm like, it's not even about, I learned that it's not even about the gender roles thing, because I don't believe in those things. It's about servitude and what makes the other person feel loved. You know, so then that created a shift for me in terms of how I perceived certain things, because I was like, I'm not going to cook just because you say so. Like, I was
not cooking for some man.
You know, no, I'm not doing that. And I still don't. Like, he even is like, still does the cleaning and he does cooking. He sometimes cooks better than me, you know. But I learned that it makes him feel loved to see me cooking, to have eaten a meal that I made. So then I was like, oh, why wouldn't I want to do something that makes you feel loved? But a lot of times with men also, it's that the servitude, of course, it's in their own way, you know. So sometimes it's taking care of you, making sure you're fine, like if it's paying for an Uber, if you don't have a car, you know. Sometimes it's just making sure you're safe, taking in, you know. Sometimes it's whatever you need emotionally, you know, as well, not just also financially and all of that, but really just making sure you're, like, they want to protect you. They want to make sure that you're safe. They want to make sure you're all right. And those are the things that I've learned as well. to embrace a lot more, you know, having not grown up with that and seeing it in a particular way based on just media and certain things, and to say, okay, so this is what it looks like. And it looks like the safety, you know, to say that this person has my back. And most times men just want to provide, hey, and that's where, because provision, because remember back in the day, like stone ages or whatever, money wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
But how providence looked like hunting and going to get something. Mm. Today in a capitalistic world, right, providence looks like money, yes. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Right? And a lot of times when somebody prioritizes you, right, they make sure that you're safe, you're okay, you're eating, you're like, I think, I remember I was reading something, and this is a conversation I had with my partner as well, yesterday actually on Twitter.
Mm.
And it was a discussion about why aren't men excited about birthdays?
Right? Wow.
Like, yes, most men don't like birthdays.
That's a good question. Not really.
So one of the things as I was reading the thread, someone said, we don't care about birthdays and things. What we care about is that we're success for us. It's if our family is eating and they're well taken care of.
Mm.
It looks different, right? For them, that's when they're stressed. If they feel unaccomplished, because that connects directly to providence, then they don't feel good about themselves, right? And that also makes it difficult. So they don't care about the glitz, the glam. That's our stuff,
yeah.
And it's okay, right? But they care more about being able to provide, being able to take care of, knowing that the person that you care of is all right, whatever, in whatever way. And it looks different for a lot of people, but sometimes it's also like prioritizing you, man.
Yeah.
When somebody goes to you, guys, if you're dating and someone goes to you, like they don't communicate, they don't prioritize, they don't show up, that's someone that's not reliable, you know? One of the things that shows that someone's in their masculine, their yes is their yes and their no is their no. They show up, you know, they keep up to their word and they're consistent and they're reliable, because any man that is of honor actually will honor themselves,
yes.
And will honor you as well, yeah.
I love that when you honor yourself, you honor others,
yeah.
You know, because you can only give what you know, what you have to give. And it's also got me thinking about, okay, so I'm dating a guy,
yeah.
And he seems to, I mean, he calls me,
yeah.
When we go out, he pays for the bill,
yeah.
But I've asked him that, you know, I want us to meet more frequently, and
yeah.
He's not really coming to the party.
Yeah.
He still wants me to be the one who plans all the dates.
Yeah.
But he'll show up to the dates. It's just, he will never
plan it,
even though I've said, I care for you, but yeah. You don't. At what point do you say, this person just doesn't care about what I want? Or do you say, actually, this is where I need to kind of compromise a little bit and say, he's doing everything else I've asked for, just not this one thing. You know, how do you know the balance? How do you know if this is a guy who respects you or a guy who's taking advantage of you and just doesn't care about what you have to say and think and need?
Okay, I think you'd have to gauge and say, is there reciprocation? If there is, okay, fine. Maybe he just doesn't think that way. You know what I'm saying?
Even if you've asked him.
Well, if you've asked, then okay, that's a different conversation. So I'd say ask first and say, hey, it makes me feel loved for when you plan dates. It makes me feel wanted. It makes me feel like you want to actually spend time with me. So I would love for you to plan more dates. Like, be very assertive and tell them what that looks like. You know, because also we miss each other when it comes to communication, you know, and stuff like that. And then two, or ask, is there a reason why you don't do that?
Yeah.
You know, and find out what their reasoning is and find out if that works for you.
Mm.
You know, so I think definitely it's about, I think most things are a conversation.
Yes.
You know, not everybody's going to be perfect. You
yes.
might get the guy that pays for the dates, that takes you out, that does that, but he's not going to plan them.
He's not going to plan.
And then you're like, it's okay. You know, I realized, like, for me, I love dates, you know.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah, I love dates. Like, I'm that girl. I'm like, let's go for a picnic.
Yes.
Let's do a live music thing, you know. My partner does them because I like them. We like the same things, but I'm the one that a lot of times is like, oh, I saw this, you know. And over time, we've built a synergy whereby, you know, now he knows what I like, and then he tells me if he sees it, because he knows I will really like to do that particular thing. So I think sometimes you just find your dynamic, you know, and then it eventually does flow. But if that, sometimes you're not going to get everything like on the thing, like you have to look at, is this a bad thing? Is it a thing that I can live with? You know, does it bother me to that extent where I cannot live with this? If this man is never going to plan a date, you know, I won't be able to live with it, then that's your deal breaker.
Yeah.
You know, but if it's not a deal breaker, then you decide to work with it. If it is, then you don't. Yeah.
And how do you leave once you feel like, I can't take this because this person's not honoring what I'm asking for? And the reason why I'm asking you that is because I heard two women speak about how to communicate your exit, right? And they were saying that so many of us will make meaningless threats. So every time the person doesn't do what we want, we say, I'm going to leave you if you don't do this, you know?
And that's, it's also like, not helpful.
Why do you do that?
Because it creates instability in the relationship.
Exactly.
Like it creates, first of all, the person loses respect for your exit. Like,
exactly.
Like, to me, like,
exactly.
You know?
She's just talking as usual. Exactly.
You know? So something that is helpful is to ask for what you want and be very specific. Make sure that they know that it's important to you, you know, and you'd also let them know if this is not something that you can provide, then, oh, I'm looking to be in a relationship where somebody communicates. If that's not something that you can do, or communicate without shouting, if that's not something that you can do for me, I don't think I'll be able to stay in this relationship. Then it's a conversation. It says, oh, I can do it. I can't do it. Okay, you can't do it. Shap, you know,
and then you go.
Yeah, then you go.
But what if you're afraid to lose them?
You're afraid to lose them.
Yeah.
I guess it's a matter of, again, like, relationships are, you know, you have to find the balance for yourself, you know, and you also have to, you can't make all decisions from fear. You have to advocate for your own needs consistently. And sometimes that conversation isn't going to happen once, because you don't come from the same background. We don't perceive the world differently. Just men and women, we're so different.
Yeah.
Like, the more I've just learn to embrace certain things, I'm like, we are so different, you know, in certain things. We are wired to be more nurturing, more emotional, because we are supposed to birth babies, and then our hormones are consistently changing to accommodate that. They're wired to protect, so they're often wired to plan, to, like, mostly in the logical side, right? And one thing that I even learned recently is that when you have estrogen, more estrogen in your body, you're more likely to be anxious.
Oh,
a lot of men don't often get anxious. They might not be able to name it, but apparently when your estrogen levels go up, right, then you become more anxious. And then when you're, and think about it, when you're about to be on your period, right, sometimes you get anxious.
Overly emotional.
Yeah,
depressed,
because your hormones are
anxious,
fluctuating.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know? So just the way we perceive and have experiences is completely different. So I always advocate, communicate. If a person cares for you, they will try,
yeah,
right? And then they'll work on it, and they're not going to have it immediately, but you have to observe and say, okay, is this person trying? And if you notice that they don't have capacity, you can exit gracefully. It doesn't have to be a conflict, you know. And I think sometimes also I encourage therapy, I encourage couples therapy or couples coaching as well, because I think we do it when it's too late, like when the conflict over small things has, like, now become a big thing.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if you notice that there's, oh, communication is a little bit of an issue here, just go to somebody to help you just learn the tools to communicate better,
yes,
you know, or learn the tools to advocate for your needs, or so that you can hear each other easier. You know, there's so many couples that I've worked with where you're like, these, you know, you guys are actually good. You just need to learn to be on the same page, or you're saying the same things, or you want the same things. You both want to feel wanted. You want to feel accepted. And you want to create a good life together, you know. And if you don't want the good life, of course, then I guide you in a different way or assist you in a different way. But I think if you want the same things, then have that conversation. And it's not always going to be an immediate response. But obviously, that doesn't mean you must wait for 10 years, 50 years, you know. Like, don't base your decisions off of fear. Like, really listen to yourself. And if somebody doesn't meet, you know, your needs, they don't care to, you know, then you have to make a decision. And it's not always going to feel good, right? But it, again, focus on your highest intention, is that you want somebody that will prioritize you, somebody that will reciprocate, somebody that will love you in a particular way,
yes,
you know, or at least want to learn. I think that's the biggest thing, you know, that the person that you're with wants to learn.
Yes.
Because nobody comes into a relationship perfect, you know. So I always say, when you're trying to manifest a relationship, write down that the person must be into personal development. Because what are you going to do with someone that doesn't want to grow?
You're actually talking about something that I want to end this podcast off on, is manifesting your dream partner. I've heard about this so much, and I actually tried it, but I'm not going to tell you guys what happened. Because some of you are in my DMs just being out of order.
Yeah.
But can you give us a step-by-step on how do you manifest your dream partner? It sounds, to a lot of people, it sounds crazy. Like, do I just think of, you know, my dream partner and then poof, they appear? Or how does it work?
Okay, so it works just like all manifestation principles. It's the same stuff, right? You decide what you want specifically. You write it down,
yeah,
you know. And I always say, don't say, I just want a relationship.
Yeah.
You're going to get just the relationship.
Hey, because the universe listens.
Exactly. And we do that so much. Like, in our thoughts, you say, I just want someone to groove with. I just want someone to talk to. You will get someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. And then if you look back on some of your experiences, you're like, yes, I manifested from a point of like I was just like focusing on the one thing that I needed then, but not on the holistic picture. Mm. You know, I want somebody to build a happy and healthy relationship with, or to build a family with. And I want them to be into these particular things. I want them to be emotionally aware, to be self-aware, and to be into personal development. So write it down specifically. And I say always be more specific than less specific.
Yes.
And as you learn, because sometimes, you know, because of different things, we manifest something, it doesn't look exactly what we want. Then we get discouraged, right? I always say learn from the experience, because that experience, you're like, that thing, I know I wrote it down, but it doesn't work for me. Yeah. Or you realize, I know for me, the thing was consistency. I didn't know that consistency must be on my list. Until
really?
I experienced a relationship where I wasn't prioritized. And I was like, consistency has to be on my list.
Wow.
And I made sure my partner has never missed a single date. It's been 3 years. Like, not one. Like, not, and he's never late for any of those things.
Wow.
Like, so, yeah, actually, that's crazy. But, and I'm always late, but that's a whole other topic. It wasn't on his list.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, just being very specific about what you want and making sure you write it down to the T.
Do the physical characteristics also count?
Yes, 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 yes.
Really?
Put them down. You know,
so I want a tall, handsome, blah, blah.
So okay. I wrote down, I just want someone who I'm attracted to. Because was also because attraction is important in relationships, right? You need to be attracted to your partner, whether it's mentally, physically, emotionally, just be attracted, you know? So I think that's something that's also, it's not superficial to put down certain things, you know, but of course your goals must be smart, you know, specific, measurable, realistic, all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I think sometimes we do have, okay, here's my thing, right? When it comes to the looks, I'm always like, is your type serving you? You put down tall, dark, handsome, or light skinned, and this and that, or mustn't be this, but I'm like, how are they treating you though? Because sometimes we get attracted to the same type, but then we experience the same pattern and we don't notice that. Do I even pay attention to the personality characteristics, or does the looks outweigh the way a person treats me? Because sometimes you're always going to fall for the same people. Like, I like them to dress this way, I like them to be this way, but it's like, how do they treat you? I think that should be like the biggest priority, right? And of course, attraction must be a thing. So do put down the things that you want, you know, even put down must be financially stable. If that's important to you, you know, must be ambitious, must be whatever it is that is important to you, you know, without self-judgment and being honest. And then, of course, one of the things that I always say, I'm like, become those things.
Become those things.
Like,
become those things.
Because you're like, you want someone who's consistent. Are you consistent?
Exactly.
You want someone who's kind. Are you kind?
Yeah.
You want someone who's self-aware. Are you self-aware? How's your communication style doing? You know, do the inner work as well. Because, again, on an energetical level, we attract what we are and what we believe. So here's the most important part about manifestation. You have to believe that you deserve what you're looking for. You know,
yes,
you have to literally believe that you are good enough and you deserve whatever it is that you're trying to create or manifest. Because what happens is the good guy shows up and then you reject him, you know, or the person comes into your life and then you sabotage it because of those limiting beliefs. And then that's when the pattern comes and you're like, how come, you know, with these ones that are inconsistent, I'm begging them for attention. And that's why the healing work is also very important.
Yes.
Because there's no way it's healthy when somebody rejects you, then you're begging for the attention. Something is off there. You know, if you're constantly chasing them, something is off. So do the healing work as well, so that you know what love looks like and feels like from within. So that when it comes into your life and it shows up, you don't reject it because it's not familiar. And of course, support that with the healing work, you know, affirm yourself, you're good enough. And if you know you need to see a therapist, if you have like relationship trauma, if you have, you know, the toxic environment where your parents didn't have healthy relationships, some of that stuff might be affecting you. So make sure you do the inner work to heal that, so that you can get that out of like your belief system, your energetical system, and just, you know, it doesn't affect you in your next relationship as well. So those are the main things. Write it down, you know, be specific. And then visualize it, of course, and then make sure that you support it with the beliefs that will allow that reality to come into your life.
Ooh, you gave us some fire tips there. Guys, I hope you've been listening. I hope you're taking down notes. I can attest to what Yvette is talking about. I've done it and it actually works. The believing, I think, is the most important part. Because once you believe, listen, sky's the limit, right? Anything is possible, whether it's financially, from a career perspective, relationship, it doesn't matter. Yvette, I wish we could speak for 3 more hours because there's so many things that we could cover. But unfortunately, we run out of time. So please, can you share your social media handles with everybody and also leave us with some parting words? What do you want everybody watching at home to think about when after they've watched this podcast, or to do after they've watched this podcast?
Okay, I guess I'll start with that and end with the handles.
Yeah.
So I think my parting words would be just take care of yourself. Like, take care of yourself. Really be intentional about the type of life you want to experience. And I think believing that it can exist for you is quite important. Mm. And also, I think just, you know, give yourself grace. Like, you're human, you're always learning. And sometimes we're so hard on ourselves. I think give yourself grace and know that you can work on yourself from a place of self-love. You don't have to beat yourself down. You can acknowledge the things that are not working in your life and then consciously work on improving those things from a place of self-love and honoring yourself. You can find me on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, and everywhere else at Yvette_Aloe. So that's Yvette_Aloe. And then my website is www.yvettealoe.co.za. And also you can follow my company page, Rooted Well, which is rooted_well_za. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We have to have you back because there's a lot to unpack.
Thank you so much for having me.
Guys, I have no words. You know, Yvette told you where to find her. She told you all these tips that allow you to manifest a life that you love, a life that you can be proud of, and just the basic steps to healing. And I think if you want to understand more, please do go on her website or her social media pages to find out more. And before you go, don't forget, like, subscribe, share, do all the good things. And let me know in the comments section below, have you ever manifested your dream relationship or career or whatever? And what have the results been? If you guys indulge me in this, I might share in the next episode if I envisioned or manifested my dream relationship and if I actually got it. Am I single? Am I taken? Who knows? But we'll talk about that in the next episode. Until then, don't forget, the easiest way or the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. Cheerio. Label line with the podcast. Teach you lesson cause I got class. Label line with the impact. You be lying, that's a real fact. Come let me teach you with us. Come let me teach you with us. Label line with the tweets. Follow me back to my name.